So when I was at art school, kind of learning about video and image and graphics and storytelling, I kind of fell in love with YouTube as a platform. And I was like, wow, this is so powerful. This is a great way to tell stories. And on that journey, I was just really frustrated with the technology and thought I need to do something about it. So it was very much my background in like visual communication and storytelling that got me here.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. Welcome to Tech Talks. Today we're talking to Saba, who is the co-founder and CEO of Veed.io. We're going to hear his story as he took on a number of incumbents in a market where there's already a range of different tools for content creators, and ask, why did he go down this route? What was it about this particular business that he felt so passionate about? And why does he think it's been successful? But today is a little bit different. As you can tell, I'm not joined by a co-host. That's because I'm in Paris for the Women in Tech Global Summit, and I've not had a chance to catch up with either Akish or Amber. But we do have something a little bit special for you. After the interview with Saba, which we will play in just a second, we're going to cross over to Dusseldorf. Today I'm joined by Saba. You shouldn't say I'm joined. I've turned up at your office, so I have joined you. But Saba, the CEO and co-founder of Veed.io, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
True.
Thanks for letting me in. Look, before we get into anything else, Veed or Veed.io is a business that some people may have heard of. I have, before I was introduced by PR, I had actually used Veed quite a few times.
Amazing, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, I have an enterprise account.
Do you?
Genuinely, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And that's not a setup.
That is a setup. That is not on the notes.
No, I decided not to share that. So I have used Veed, but for those who haven't and don't know what it is, do you want to explain?
Of course. Well, first of all, thank you for being a user and using the platform. You have to give me very detailed feedback after this, obviously off mic. But for those of you who don't know, Veed is an online video editing platform. Our goal is to just make video editing and creation accessible to anyone. We think that video is this incredibly powerful like medium to communicate and tell stories, and it shouldn't be locked up for professionals. So what we're trying to do is build tooling to give anyone the power to create something just from their browser with just a few clicks and no skill, really. Anyone can just go in and just get their job done.
When you say anyone, I was trying to explain this to a colleague earlier who hadn't heard of Veed. And I said, yeah, it's kind of like, it's halfway in my head, it's halfway in between kind of an Adobe and something very, very basic on your phone. And I suppose it could be used by an influencer trying, you know, or just someone who's interested in video editing, or even a marketeer. Where do you see the sweet spot being of what you've created?
It's a very good question. So we always say that Veed can be used by like the president of the United States to, you know, a school child just kind of learning to make their first video. And it's kind of reflected in our user base as well. Over 10 million people come to the platform on a monthly basis. And there's so many people doing so many different things. The content that resonates the most with our kind of user base is making what we call a talking head video, which is, well, exactly what it says on the tin, someone talking at a camera. And we find this to be really powerful because people are sharing a message, telling a story. They might be doing training or education, but it's sharing that message. That's what was really important.
So let's have a chat about your own background then. How are you a founder of this business that, you know, people are coming and using this platform, it's successful, and it's growing quite rapidly, I think. But your background is not your usual tech founder, right?
No, not at all. I have no idea how I got here, to be honest. But the short version is, I went to an art school because I was obsessed with visual communication. And I was obsessed with visual communication because I actually found every other medium of communication quite difficult. I was very bad at reading, very bad at writing, so visual communication came very naturally to me as basically because everything else was hard. This was what I felt to be easy. So when I was at art school kind of learning about video and image and graphics and storytelling, I kind of fell in love with YouTube as a platform, and I was like, wow, this is so powerful. This is a great way to tell stories. And I wanted to originally kind of make my own content, very similar to you, actually, right? I thought it was incredible to be able to tell stories. And on that journey, I was just really frustrated with the technology and thought I need to do something about it. So I used my favorite medium of, video to learn how to code, and then could kind of start building an MVP for the product. Met my co-founder, Tim, who was way more technical than me, and we kind of got something going. So it was very much my background in like visual communication and storytelling that got me here.
And is Veed your first tech company? Were there earlier iterations? Because it feels like there's quite a big gap, maybe perhaps, between that kind of art school to where we are here today.
Yeah, I mean, I worked this out the other day. There's 4 years.
Right.
In between it. What I was doing for those 4 years was trying to learn how to build a company.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100%.
So was it trying to solve the problem, or was it building a business, or building a business as a default of trying to solve the problem?
Like, every year on the way back to see my mum for Christmas, I remember on the train journey, I'd write my plan for next year down.
Right.
And in that plan, there was like two things that kept coming up. One was just like, I want to be able to like start my own technology company or have a product that makes like passive income to support my own creative endeavors, so I can then make my own content, make my own creativity, make my own stories, blogs, whatever. So that was kind of always the plan, but it kind of turned out that actually building that software and that business is the thing that kind of took over my life to where I am now.
Now, you said that you struggled with traditional forms of communication. I found this really interesting when I got the notes from our PR company, because it mentioned that you're dyslexic. Now, my wife's dyslexic, and when I met her, she was on stage. And for her, when she was at Montessori school, which she was initially, they very much believed that children would express themselves in whichever way felt most comfortable, and it was very much about each individual's learning style. And so for her, it was always about show and tell rather than write down. And it was only at a latter stage, when she was taken out of Montessori school, that the dyslexia was picked up, because she was so good at masking it through effectively performing arts. Do you think that's something that... Were you always aware that you were dyslexic? Or was that something that was just, you know, when did you just discover that you had that diagnosis?
I can't even really remember. I think it's always been there. But it's fascinating that you said show, don't tell, because I say that all the time in the company. Whenever we launch new features, it's not tell them about how it works. Let's show them how it works. I think it's so powerful to show and not tell. It's really strange that you said that. But for all the same reasons of your wife, like, I think some people are better at communicating in different ways.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just like visual communication just really, really does it, really works for me.
Do you think that's something that's sometimes overlooked in education? Because I could imagine Veed being a really fun tool for teenagers and for kids at school who perhaps, I know it's not aimed at EdTech, but understanding that awareness of how different people communicate and how different people learn, it's something that we're not necessarily always aware of.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very apparent now. We're moving to a world where children are growing up with phones in their hands, scrolling on TikTok, and all they do is consume video, right?
Yeah.
It's very different to when I grew up and all I had was textbooks to read.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very much more adapted for a world of today, and I'm very happy to be building tools to help more people, you know, create video and consume video, just so they can, I suppose, solve a very similar problem that I had myself.
I suppose what I'm kind of trying to drive at in an inarticulate way is perhaps, did it make it easier for you to learn to code? Because I could imagine...
No, not at all. Right. By the way, that's not easy.
Because I was imagining learning to code as someone who's dyslexic is a nightmare, perhaps. But because you had that, what you were trying to build might have made it a little bit more... Right, I've got this ambition, I know what I want to do.
The funny thing about learning to code, when I was like coding with my co-founder, is I would spell like the names of like functions wrong. But the good thing was, like, my spelling was consistently bad. So all the functions were named, well, spelt wrong, but throughout the whole code base. So that's the only time that spelling kind of, and the written word was a problem for me. Learning to code more specifically for me, I actually found quite, not easy, but it was kind of like patterns and constructions. And it was a bit more like Lego than it was like constructing a sentence and spelling things correctly.
Right, interesting. So look, there's a huge amount of different tools out there in the video editing world. Right from, you know, Adobe on the very professional level through to, you know, just the basic tools that you get free with TikTok or Instagram. What do you try and do with Veed to make it stand out as opposed to all those other offerings that are there available for people today?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, like the market of video is just absolutely huge. And there's so many different ways and types that people want to make videos. So you mentioned, you know, more like social media tools, which are great for making social media videos. It could be about swapping your face and putting a nice filter on and making sure your skin looks great so you're more confident to post it. You then have tools that are more kind of directed at helping businesses solve problems, which is a bit more where we sit. You can record presentations along with your face at the same time and have that in nice templates. You can add branding, upload your font. And so we're really kind of sitting more at that prosumer level where, you know, knowledge workers and, you know, people that are sitting at their laptops doing their everyday job can actually go ahead and make a video as well. And they can do it in the context of work. And we've been very intentional about building tools to help them get their jobs done. Whether it's translating videos into multiple language because you're a large company, to being too camera shy to turn up yourself so you can just use an AI avatar to go instead, you know, bunch of cool and fun tools like that.
And what are your ambitions for the business as it grows? Kind of where do you see this going in the next, you know, you mentioned that maybe 4 years on from education, where do you think you might be in 2 years' time? Let's not say four, because that seems too
controlled. Yeah. The thing that's at the top of my mind right now is how scary the future is. Like, the whole AI stuff is very, very... It's changing a lot. It's changed the way... It's fundamentally changed the way that people write and consume and collect information. And I think it's going to really change the way that we create videos as well. Whether it's using... I mean, I don't want to get too techy and deep right now, but... You know, what we see is the fact that large language models are really good at kind of like synthesizing information, finding highlights and summarizing things. And, you know, if you have a transcript of a video, which is basically the written word of the video, you can effectively manipulate it in any way a large language model could.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think there's some really cool stuff. I know. Tell me about
it. Look, I am not the expert here, but take this podcast. I like using quite old school editing tools to put together the podcast in the way that I like, because I think that's part of the creative process. I know that you've got AI tools out there that would allow you to create a video from text prompt. That's not really creative necessarily. I quite like the idea that you can play around with a tool and see how something looks. And to me, that's the creative thing. Do you think that, I know that you're saying the AI is quite scary, but surely if you're creative and that's what you enjoy, that's part of the process, is playing around with the tools rather than just a text prompt that creates something for you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting discussion, which we could probably talk about for a long time. but look, I think you're always going to have like your artisans. I mean, you have to, right? Like, and I'm very much an artisan myself. I love details and craft and creativity. But I also, from where I sit, see that a lot of people don't really want that. They want to get something done and they want to get it done very quick and efficiently. I think it's interesting to design and think about the future and build towards that future and kind of see how everything else kind of clicks into place along the way.
So if you're building towards that future, of those scary advancements, what are you picking and trying to incorporate into your platform that you think is actually a lot of fun and will help elevate what your users are creating?
So I might eat my words in a few years if I listen back to this, which I probably will. But I mean, I'm personally really interested in this like hybrid co-pilot model of editing with AI, where imagine this. You walk away from this interview and you're like, oh God, I forgot to ask him this question, or I said the wrong word here. Like, it's going to be really hard to then go and, you know, re-record that or come back to this very office to get the very sound of this room to re-record that bit. Okay, so let's say, you know, you could just write out that word and that's really useful. So you don't have to re-record. Okay, great. So that's really helpful. But can we take it a step further? Can we then take that whole podcast or the video of this podcast and then say, okay, generate a summary? And then, cool, it's generated a summary and it's done that with no words that were actually recorded here. We did that with our voices being cloned. And then we kind of take that and we're like, oh, but it's just not energetic enough.
Hmm.
So then we say, okay, make it more energetic. And actually what it does is it swaps out some of the words with some more shorter words that match a faster pace. And the cuts in between the words and the breaths that we take is a little bit shorter. I think that could be really interesting.
Yeah?
I do.
I have to say, my initial gut reaction to that, and I think that's maybe where the artisan piece comes in, is, oh, I don't know about that, because it doesn't feel authentic.
I know what you mean, and I'm pretty sure that's how people felt at the turn of the Industrial Revolution.
I'm basically a Luddite.
Do you know what I mean? Do you ever think
that? I get that. I mean, I talk about technology a lot.
Like, we're drinking out of these mugs, yeah, right, yeah, that are bought from IKEA, and they're honestly disgusting. And at home, I've got these really nice handmade ones that's from a little place near where I grew up.
Yeah.
And I love them. But I think there's a place for both of them in this world.
Earlier on in the conversation, you were talking about, you were always planning, you were always thinking about how to build this business. As a CEO now, as a tech founder hat on, what are the biggest challenges for you over the next 6 months? And I appreciate that might reflect a lot of what we've just been talking about, but what are the challenges as a leader of this business that you're facing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's very timely you asked me that, because the one thing that I just keep coming back to every 4 to 6 months is how you just need to keep learning. Like, you know, the business that we have today is very different than I had 2 years ago, and the being a leader changes every 6 months at a company that's, you know, doubling, tripling every year. And yeah, that's, you just got to remember to check yourself, you know, and like do the work and get feedback and speak to other people and try and be better. Mm. And it's easier said than done, you know, tough thing to get right.
If learning is paramount, which obviously it is, what question do you have when you take time to get out of the office and to meet your peers, or maybe you're at a conference? What question do you have for other people that you want to ask?
You know what? The thing that I'm actually really wanting at this moment in time isn't to ask any questions. It's actually to just do nothing.
Yeah?
I got an ad for a silent retreat, and I was like, sign me up. It'd be really good to have some time to not speak, not talk, not listen, just to sit there and take it in.
Yeah.
Think about it. No?
I think, I mean, everyone probably needs an element of that every now and then.
We're so plugged in, aren't we? I'm listening to a podcast on the way here. I'm on calls, I'm writing, I'm doing this. We just need to kind of take a step back, take stock, and just rethink about, like, what's important to us, right? What are the things that we should be focused on? There's a lot of noise in this world. There's a lot, like, 80-20, right? I think I just need to take a step back and think. And then maybe after that, I'll come and have that one question that you asked me for.
So look, if someone wants to find out a bit more about your service, it's veed.io, right?
Correct, yes.
Well, look, Saba, thank you very much for letting me come and invade your space today.
No worries at all. Thanks for coming.
So I promised that we crossed to Dusseldorf. What did I mean by that? Well, a couple of weeks ago, I hosted our Dusseldorf Digital Leadership Report. As you know, this podcast normally focuses on the UK, the US, and sometimes we do go abroad. The German market is one which we don't talk about, and we should. It is the fourth most desirable destination in the world for technologists, and the most desirable destination for non-English speaking technologists. So it's a huge market, and one which we can't afford to overlook. And this recording, as I said, it was an event that I hosted. This recording was taken at that event. I stuck a microphone on two volunteers, unsuspecting audience members, but two experts nonetheless, as you're about to hear. And we spoke about talent, AI, and cybersecurity. So something a little bit different to finish off today's episode. And we'll be back on Friday.
Where's Carsten?
Here.
Come on. So Carsten and Marcus, thank you for doing this. But let's start with AI. And I know both of you probably might have some opinions on this, but just to pull in some of that data from the survey, organisations with an AI policy, globally, 21%. More in Asia, less in North America, possibly unsurprising. Europe actually is 21% as well. And where AI regulation is concerned, as we said during the presentation, 61% think that regulation won't work, but 9 in 10 do appreciate that it's needed. I was speaking to the Estonian government's chief data officer a couple of weeks ago. He's writing the policy for Estonia and feeding that into the AI policy for the EU. And he said, due to the complexity, those of you waiting on regulation, it's not coming. They're just going to encourage SMEs to adopt AI and start running with it. With that in mind, is it slightly concerning that only 1 in 5 have an AI policy and more than a third have no plans for an AI policy?
So it's quite a difficult topic because we all know this Arnold Schwarzenegger film movie.
Yeah. Which one?
I think it has been called Terminator or something. Yeah. So and we all remember the Skynet topic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where the evil robotics are fighting against the human beings. And if you're having that in mind, and if you're having technical singularity in mind, perhaps we need some regulation on it. Yeah, because and I was fearing in 2015, I guess it was when Google bought Boston Dynamics. Mm-hmm. I think they have sold it in 2017 to a Japan. Organization, bank, I can't remember. But again, when we are coming to this in mind, that potentially the self-developing AI is running and we are not getting any more in control of it. And in the background, suddenly a super brain is growing and taking some wishes to rule the world, then I think we have to have some rules and policies in mind that this will not be happening. Is that a good opinion or not?
I think so. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, if you listen to Elon Musk, that threat is existential. However, when you talk to professors of robotics and AI, they'll tell you that artificial general intelligence is about as intelligent as your cat. And my cat is incredibly stupid.
I wouldn't say that. do you know the game Go?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. So you remember in 2016, 17, where the first time a stupid intelligence AI have been winning about over a human being. So and it's a complex game, more complex than chess. Yeah. And so I guess. If you're having that in mind again, AI is really something we have to think about.
Okay, let me throw this out. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think you everyone has to experiment with it to have it on top of mind and not lose contact. And I think regulations won't work. Like Elon Musk said, let's stop for half a year. How should that work? Yeah. I don't know that this is a good idea because if everyone agrees, the dark side will work on it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone has to be working on it, experiment with it, and have ethics in mind. Mm-hmm. And data, of course.
Let's throw this out there then. I was on stage last week and a CIO who I was interviewing threw out this scenario where there is a US-based airline who utilized generative AI to help them write policy. And the generative AI decided that they didn't have a bereavement policy and hallucinated a bereavement policy, which then a customer claimed against. Mm-hmm. And in the court of law, they said, well, you've got this policy in your policy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that AI wrote it. It's your AI. It's your data. You have to be held accountable to that. Does that concern you that education around AI, especially when non-technical staff are beginning to utilize these tools, that if we don't have a policy, that might be a real concern for organizations?
Of course, yeah.
How do we educate? How do we make sure that people understand these tools and they're used appropriately within organizations, and perhaps educate people when they're not needed?
So for my understanding is, my question here is it allowed to use ChatGPT, for instance, to produce some documents for your master degree or whatever? I don't know if it's possible. It's possible, of course, but is it allowed? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've heard that today they are already checking master degree documents if they have been written with a chatbot or ChatGPT or whatever. Yeah? Because when it's too good, it has been written with ChatGPT or something similar.
Yeah.
If there are failures or misunderstandings in it, then it is written by the person itself. So what is the differentiator for us if it's being written with an AI or with ChatGPT, or if it's written by a human being? So, and is it allowed? Is it valid to use it?
We have to adapt to the new reality, I think. It is there, so we have to...
So you are allowing that the doctor degree is being created by a ChatGPT. So it's not anymore your personal effort to create something like this.
Yeah, you still have to be accountable for what you sign, like with this airline. If it produces nonsense.
Is it then not similar? We have had in the past a couple of years, you know, Gutenberg, mm-hmm. and we have had some other prominent issues where somebody has been used the ghostwriter for creating his doctor's exam. Is it not really the same with ChatGPT? I don't know. Is it the same?
Clearly, there's an area to debate there. I'm afraid I have said that we'll keep this short and hopefully engaging for everyone. So we'll move on to talent shortage. I read on the way over here on the plane today that Germany is the top non-English speaking destination for foreign workers. That was announced today.
I can agree.
So whilst the global skill shortage has eased, according to our survey, this report might partially explain why 70% or 76% rather fear that a lack of talent stops German businesses keeping pace with change. So a couple of questions. Which skills do you think are the most critical for businesses right now? And how can we ensure that there's a greater pipeline of talent? And are budgeting restrictions limiting the ability to recruit, resulting in investment elsewhere? So which are the most critical skills as you see it right now in your businesses, and is investment elsewhere limiting the ability to recruit?
I think one important skill is curiosity. Yeah, curiosity and no fear before some new technologies. If you're interested in something, then you're getting good in that what you're doing, regardless of if it's AI topic, big data, or whatever, I don't know. Yeah? So from my understanding, curiosity is one of the biggest soft skills. Is it a soft skill? No, it's not a soft skill. It's It's one of the biggest most important skills which somebody have to have. And then, of course, and when we are coming to technical skills or whatever you mean, I don't know. We are I don't know the English word for it. Wir treiben die Sau durchs Dorf. I don't know. We are driving the pig through the village. I don't know the English expression of it. And AI is right now is that pig right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. 15 years ago, we have had this green IT topic. Then 10 years ago, we have that cloud topic. Now we have the AI. I guess it will be getting normalized, and the skills, the roles which are needed are being developed in the time. So, I don't know if we are already know what kind of skills we need. Do we need a chat GPT prompter? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree to you. There's this saying or a quote, something like you don't hire skills, you hire attitude.
Yeah, it's the, exactly.
For us, it's the more important thing, because skills you have the possibility to learn, but like the Marines or no assholes rules. Yeah, that's more important than having the best skills. But it's still a tough way to educate people.
Yeah.
So perhaps less technical skills needed because AI is providing more productivity. And therefore,
depends
less room for assholes.
It depends.
You might have technical skills.
You have to control the AI, so you have to have the skills, right?
And that is depending on where Europe wants to stand in the future. Mm-hmm. Do we want to have our own AI technology, or do we want to be dependent on the US market or perhaps Chinese market, mm-hmm. whatever? So if Europe wants to be still a leading domain or region in the future, of course we need some engineers to create our own technique, our own AI domain in Europe, because otherwise we are completely dependent on the big hyperscalers currently, like Google, Amazon, or Microsoft.
Talking about cybersecurity then, lastly, how much of a headache do you think generative AI is for security leaders? And we talk about cybersecurity being the cost of doing business, but we're increasingly seeing legal challenges around data breaches coming from the US. We're beginning to see them in the UK. I imagine we'll begin to see them globally. How is this on the radar of the CFO at the moment?
Should I start? Or you do want to start?
Yeah, we are a small company, right? We have 50 people, but for us, the cybersecurity is a big thing. We think we have it, we can control it, but you never know, yeah? Because if the enemy is faster than you and they have the criminal energy, you have to be aware.
So in my former company, we have been hacked in 2020. So we have been rigged, or whatever you can call it. Everything was being encrypted globally. And I guess in these days, it was not caused by an artificial intelligence. It was caused by some very clever Russian hackers, I guess. Today, of course, and coming back to the AI topic, of course, AI can accelerate how hackers can intrude your systems.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it's always a challenge, or it's always a run between a competitive run between the companies which wants to protect their domains, their networking domains, and of course the evil guys outside which wants to intrude into company networks. So from my understanding, AI is a chance to detect anomalies in the behavior of a network, Otherwise, a human brain couldn't identify, for instance, or can check the patterns between a real infection or real hacker attack and perhaps a normal or stupid user, I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is helping us, AI is helping us to detect anomalies, and we should use it. But of course, the evil side will use it as well. But nevertheless, I think it is valid.
Yeah. The race is going faster all the time.
Yeah. Two more quick questions then, so that people can get back to talking. Our survey says that major cyber attacks are down. That was challenged in a conversation I was having about 10 minutes ago. And funnily enough, anecdotally, I hear from people, from leaders when I talk to them, that attacks are up. Do you think the survey's got it wrong? And if it has, why?
I wouldn't believe your survey right now, sorry to say. Yeah. Because if I'm listening or if I'm reading actually today's news, I can see every time, today this company has been hacked, Microsoft a few days ago have been hacked, or because they have released public or code in the public section, of course. But nevertheless, I think it's not decreasing. The attacks are not decreasing. I think they are stable. I don't know if the evil energies are being focused on other areas right now, when we are talking about Israel or if we're talking about Ukraine. I don't know if they are centralizing all the energies right now into these areas. But I think we are on the same level as the years before. That's my personal impression or my personal opinion about that.
And the awareness in the public is getting higher. You read it more in the news than some years ago.
But I have to admit that I've been trapped as well a few days ago, where I've been clicking on an evil hyperlink in the mail, which the mail was really 100% clever designed, and I was so stupid and have been clicked on it. So it can be happen every day, everywhere. And the only thing what you can do right now is to train your employees to create the first line of defense with your employees, that they are not trapping in each or falling each trap from the beginning. Yeah. So the first line of defense is always the employee.
Hopefully that's provided some sparks of debate for people. Thank you very much, Carsten and Marcus, for answering a few questions up here with regards to the survey. And thank you for, again, listening to the English and bearing with my lack of German. So thank you very much.
Next time we'll improve your English skills, German skills. You have said danke. You have said danke.
I said danke.
Yeah. Now we are improving it. You can say danke schön.
Danke schön.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Danke schön.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.